Welcome to Breaking Bread, the podcast brought to you by Apostolic Christian Counseling and Family Services. Today we have a guest with us in our studio, Dr. Aaron Plattner.
That sounds so official. I appreciate that.
Welcome. So you are a psychiatrist, and we'll talk a little bit about what you do and the services you provide here to ACCFS, but I want to take this opportunity to allow you to speak into this sphere of mental health as well, because you've got a unique skill set and a unique study behind what you do. But let's start with even the before credit class of Psychiatry 101. What's the difference between psychiatry, psychology, and what do you bring to the table then?
Sure. Good question. And I think a lot of people get confused about a psychologist or a psychiatry. They both do treat mental illness, but different ways. Psychologists are those that go to school and then either get a master's in psychology or maybe a PhD. They'll do more of the therapy, family therapy or individual therapy, those sorts of things. A psychiatrist is someone who goes to undergrad, then medical school, and then at some point in medical school decides, I want to go the route of psychiatry versus someone else goes the routes of surgery or pediatrics or whatever. Part of psychiatry is therapy, so we are taught in the same sort of thing as therapy, but the one difference is that as a medical doctor from med school, you can actually prescribe medications when appropriate, and a psychologist cannot do that. So that's probably the biggest difference. The real tension lies in, does this need to be treated by therapy or does this need to be treated by medication? I would say there's probably a combination of both. So the beautiful thing about ACCFS is I'm the psychiatrist, but pretty much everyone I see has a psychologist or a therapist, so we can kind of bring those two together.
To blend them.
Yeah.
To try to find the best treatment and the best help.
Yes.
I would imagine, as a Christian, this journey of studying the mind, studying the brain, how medication, behavioral, environment, as you mentioned, all blends together, there's some real gray areas. I think, as a believer, there's some tension here to say, what is of the spirit and what is the biology? Can you bring us along a little bit and kind of the Cliff Notes version of that journey that you've had to help us understand and maybe better understand psychiatry?
It has been a journey. I think in any sort of area you look at, you're going to have people on extremes. It's all this or it's all that. And the problem is nothing is that simple. So the way that I hope to pursue or look at an illness or someone's condition is basically four different potential options. One is that it can be physiological, and that's basically more of a biological thing. So if someone has low thyroid, they're going to be very tired. And so we wouldn't really necessarily give them a medicine for depression. We'd fix their thyroid. We give them a thyroid medication. I think most Americans are not getting as much sleep as they should. That's across the board, and I'm guilty of that as well. But if we're not getting good 7 to 9 hours of sleep at night, our bodies are tired. And then when we get tired, we get cranky and we get a little bit more irritable. That's not something we need to treat with medicines. You need to get good sleep. So one of those things
bear themselves out in our spiritual walk.
Very true.
That stem back to exhaustion.
Yes. You think of even Elijah. He had this great mountaintop experience with the
prophets of Baal.
Prophets of Baal, that's right. And he's on this high, and then Jezebel wants to get him, and even says, "I want to die." And the first thing the Lord does is give him food. Here's some food. You just wonder if he was somewhat exhausted and tired.
His sugar levels were not.
Yes,
right.
Sugar levels were very low. But God just going to his physiological needs and then encourage him. So that's the first one. The second one would be a moral basis. David talks in the Psalms about how God's wrath weighed heavy on him, and that was crushing to him. And as we see the nation making its choices, it was really interesting that the state of Utah recently said that pornography is a public health crisis. And there was an article in the Washington Post that basically said, pornography is causing problems with people's relationships, which is making people unhappy. So we see a moral thing leading to unhappiness.
Immoral lifestyles have their consequences.
They do.
And society is seeing those consequences and raising the issue of, this is not a good thing.
This is, yes.
And correct. So to your point, so we have a bucket of biology. Our biology is out of kilter. And then there's also a bucket in our life of morality, which is simply this is the way God said it would be if we don't do this or do this.
Which is true. And I think it's his mercy that we have this moral bucket that when I've sinned against my brother or my neighbor or something that causes an emotional response of the Lord saying, hey, this isn't right. You need to go back and you need to make that right. You need to change and you know.
So as even as a psychiatrist, that would be one lens that you would look at and say, do we have a body issue that needs to be tweaked or adjusted, or do we have a moral issue here that this is a heavy conscience and that is the emotional response?
Potential cause.
What's the third bucket?
Third bucket would be more of my line of just a mental condition. And this is very tricky as well and takes discernment because we do not have, you know, a blood test or an x-ray that we can look at and say, your levels of depression are high. Essentially, I sit down with someone and I ask them questions. And after asking them questions, we can kind of come up with a group of symptoms that can be described by a particular condition. So this is borne out by what's called twin studies. So they took biological twins and they were adopted. So one was raised like in California and one was raised in Connecticut. So, I mean, just across the nation. And they have a group of them. And then they said, okay, if this one has a chance of having this condition, what's the chance of the twin having that same condition, even raised in totally separate environments? And what they found is if one of the twins had a certain psychiatric illness, the other twin had a much larger chance of having that than the general population. So there is a biological component that we see in these twin studies. And
those results are statistically significant in the sense that we shouldn't see this connection by just random chance.
That would be correct, especially because they're raised in different environments. But I think we all see within ourselves, our family members, we all have different temperaments. You know, some people just tend to be more happy and always a bit more joyful. Some people tend to be a little bit more on the anxious side, and some people maybe tend to have a little bit more of despair or more of a depression leaning, if you will. And even when we look at, you know, the moral or physiological, we see that they seem to be walking and uprightly, and they seem to be medically okay or stable or healthy. That's when they can come to me, and so we can address one of two ways. One is, once again, a medication route, and then the other one would be with therapy, talking these things through, or having a combination of both of those.
You have the physiological, and you talked about sleep and such. You have the moral bucket of, are we trespassing against God's commands? That's why we are feeling certain ways. There's a psychological, which is really what you professional experiences in, and with this psychological in terms of what's happening in the brain that's leading us that way. And then there's a fourth. What's the fourth?
Paul says we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but we wrestle against principalities, which is a term for a demonic kind of hierarchy, if you will. And I think in our Western culture, you know, the topic of demons and those sorts of things makes people very anxious and nervous and don't feel comfortable talking about it. We're really okay with angels, but once you talk about demons, that's a whole nother book or a whole nother area. I think worldwide, other cultures will see demons as something that is more accepted.
And in fact, I was just in a conversation last night with a mission outpost down on a different continent, and there was a situation there, and that was their actually default. They went quickly to the demonic realm. And when some of the onlookers who relayed this story were kind of thinking in the psychiatry bucket a little bit, you know. So all of that to say, these areas get blended. There's really quite a bit of discernment. I just want to put as well and assert here that greater is he that is within us than he that is in the world. And so there's a tremendous answer even for that scary bucket, right?
Yes.
In Christ. To our listeners that don't know your background, you are in a full-time practice.
Yes.
And a practice removed from ACCFS.
That's correct.
So we tap you for a couple hours a week.
Yes.
And so when you speak to these issues, your clientele is much more broad than this agency.
That is correct. I do some inpatient work. So I have an inpatient population that comes into the psychiatric hospital, and I work with them and their families kind of in a more urgent, acute setting, and then send them out to other people. And then ACCFS is an opportunity to do some outpatient work with the people that are a bit more stable.
Yeah. So let's go into the psychiatry bucket, right? Because that is your area of expertise. Talk to us a little bit about the brain. What have you learned about the brain? What are we learning about the brain in terms of thoughts and emotions and all that is? Now, remember, this is 101
here. Yes, 101.
Okay.
Got it. So the brain is very, very complicated. I think it's fearfully and wonderfully made. What we know is that different areas of the brain interact with each other to make our bodies move, feel, and function. So the front part of the brain, your forehead, that's the frontal lobe. So that is the part that develops last, because as we grow, our brains are developing. That is our higher level thinking. That's our ability to focus and concentrate. That's our ability to take complex things and put them together.
You just explained a great deal of the behavior of my children. So it hasn't fully developed. Did I hear you right?
That is correct.
Excellent. Great to know.
Yes.
That was the takeaway.
Everyone rest assured that your teenagers are still developing their ability to make good decisions.
So that frontal part is a little bit like the brakes, for example, of your brain that says, whoa, well, let's think about
slow
this
down.
A moment. Slow down. Let's process through this.
That's a great analogy.
What's another part?
And we just go right into the middle. That is more of our emotional part. So there's an area of our brain called the limbic system. If we talk about the frontal lobe being the brake, that deep limbic system, that's the gas. That is what makes us emotionally charged. And that can be good. I mean, if there's an emergency, someone's house is on fire, you want to be charged. You want to be active to take action, to do things. So we need that part of the brain to keep us going in certain situations.
In a case like that, where there's a fire or something, you might actually do something that your front of the part of the brain would say, no, don't do that, but you need to do it.
That's true.
It charges ahead through that, maybe.
That is very true. Yes. And so, once again, the balance of the front and that inner part are interacting together to find that balance of when to turn it on and when to, you know, back off.
Yeah.
So the limbic system is probably the primary one that can become malfunction or doesn't work right, that a psychiatrist would be more adapt to address would adapt that. Sometimes medications can bring a calmness to that area that can allow people to then move through with the therapy or move through with working through those mood symptoms, because we can look at that area like on CT, which is a scan. So we can look at different scans or MRI, or there's these other studies called PET studies, which basically, as the brain gets active or not active, it lights up in different colors. And so what we can see is different people with different mood symptoms have different levels of things light up or not lit up that should be, that has those mood symptoms.
So it gives you an idea that this is what should be lighting up given the situation, but this is not. Over here is what's lighting up.
Exactly. You're driving in traffic and you're in a city and you don't know where you're going. You need to be a little anxious to make sure you don't miss your exit.
Yeah.
Because that's horrible. And I think we all have family vacations of dad missing the exit and what that creates in the whole car. Sorry, Dad. But that's a good thing of being anxious. But what you can see, so if you could take someone and do a scan at that point of that anxiety, that's a healthy anxiety, you'll see certain things lit up. Now, someone who's just anxious, just, you know, on a daily basis, those areas are still lit up, but there's no reason that they should. And if it's lit up too long, it can lead to all sorts of physical, you know, tiredness, burnout, bad choices, not sleeping well, which kind of feeds into now you're not sleeping well, so your symptoms get worse. And so it's this kind of horrible loop that you can start to create, and to get out of that loop can be very, very difficult.
Yeah.
So that's where sometimes medications can kind of go in there and kind of calm things down so that people can right some things and then move forward and be able to kind of reverse that loop that is made or created.
What is being lit up and what is the medication? And I know neurotransmitters have something to do with this, right? Okay. Is there a way that you can kind of make sense of it?
Essentially, we have a couple different neurotransmitters. One is norepinephrine, which is basically the excitatory one. This gets us excited, which is good. So if you're studying or in church, you want your norepinephrine to be turned on a little bit. And then you're not falling asleep. Like yeah. you're active and you're engaged and you're focusing. When that becomes maybe a little bit too much turned on in different areas, people can be overly anxious.
And is that a chemical?
It is a chemical. So when a neuron wants to talk to another neuron, basically a signal is sent through something like a norepinephrine, which then goes to another cell and says, I want you to do this, or I want you to do that.
Okay, so this neurotransmitter is a transmitter. It is a messenger in a
it's
sense.
A messenger.
It takes the message to the next neuron and make those connections.
It does.
So neurotransmitters are just like emojis.
Emojis, okay. In a way, that's
all right.
Right.
Okay,
that's a good example.
Hey, this is simple. I think I could do your job.
any day. So that's norepinephrine. The other one is serotonin. And that tends to be more associated with depression. That for some reason, with all these complicated things, sometimes people's levels of serotonin can be lower or suboptimal. And so something like an SSRI, which is like Prozac or Paxil or Zoloft or Celexa, can go into that and raise that serotonin levels. Now, we talked about the four buckets, so I don't want to say that's the only answer, because it's not.
Yeah.
It's not the only answer, but it can be one of the part of a complicated situation. But for some people, raising that level can help with their depression, their sadness.
I hear dopamine thrown around
yes.
a lot. What's dopamine?
So dopamine is the reward neurotransmitter. So when we do good things, there's an enjoyment to it. God has put into us this dopamine that says, these are gifts from me, and I want you to continue them. Now, obviously—
So it is a positive reward.
It's a positive
if you
reward.
If you have dopamine neurotransmitting, that's a pleasure feeling.
That's a pleasure.
It's going to be something you connect with, remember, and want to repeat.
Yes. Yes. Christmas is dopamine. I mean, kids opening presents, you know, the excitement. I mean, the problem with dopamine is sometimes it can be hijacked. It can be taken over. And that's where we have a lot of addictions, where someone turns to something, name the drug, and it feels good. And so instead of turning to what God has said is good and healthy, we turn to these other things to fill that need. And then it takes over. And that's where you see people who, when they're stressed, they turn to the drug. When they're sad, they turn to the drug. When they feel anxious, they turn to the drug instead of turning to other things that God has put in to say these are good. And so that dopamine pathway basically gets hijacked and people will turn to whatever drug that is. And we see a lot of addictive behaviors in that manner. There are some people that whenever they're stressed, whenever they turn to gambling, that excitement of I might win the big one, it kind of stirs that dopamine
pathway up.
That's right.
And then gives you a high in a sense,
right? Yes.
Gives you a high in a sense that you want to match or repeat. Do we find then that if left to this end of dopamine, that we can create a lifestyle that is jacked up on dopamine, for example, and then the life that God has called us to then doesn't match the excitement, therefore we don't pursue it? I'm just thinking out loud.
I think when we look at dopamine levels, there's definitely surges of dopamine. And so I think if you turn to a life that is not centered on Christ or biblical principles, you kind of are chasing the next high. So you have these high spikes that at the top of the spike feels great, but you're always trying to catch that next high spike. But if you would actually look at the area under the curve, the area of the dopamine overall, I think if you have that lifestyle and chasing spikes, you might have specific small periods of time where that spike is high, but having a Christian life, which is joy and peace and all the fruit of the Spirit, I think you're going to find the area under the curve is much greater because you just have this constant peace and this constant happiness and joy. You're going to have ebbs and flows, ups and downs like everyone else. But I think that calmness is a reward of God saying, you know, if you live a biblical life, you're going to have joy and you're going to have peace in these sort of the things. And it's not going to be this kind of pursuit over the next high.
Yeah.
The pursuit over the next, if I could just get this again, I'll feel better.
Isn't there an element of dopamine that is anticipatory?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's not necessarily that the achievement, but it's the hope of or the chasing of that. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. You think about vacation. I mean, we look forward to vacation and we have that excitement. And that's a good thing because we are going to get together. We're all going to have, you know, times on the beach or whatever it is. So that anticipatory thing of God's good gifts is a dopamine driven pathway that I think pushes us in that direction. If we didn't have that anticipation, if we didn't have that drive, we probably wouldn't do it.
One of the ahas, Aaron, as you talk about it, is I come to realize that my brain is a drug manufacturer.
It is.
Which helps me understand drug addiction better, right? Because
correct,
you're basically stimulating what your brain already naturally does, mm-hmm. but you're infusing it with what you want, right? And God has created our brain to be tremendous here. So when we look at the medication piece, what you're doing is you're helping those chemical levels to be at the right place, to play at the right time, to be at the right levels. Is that a good way to understand it?
We're not actually really giving anything. We're more of changing the way our body produces or doesn't produce the different things.
Okay. Aaron, this has been very intriguing. Truly, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And I think all of our brains are a bit full at the moment. So let's take a break here. But when we return in the next episode, the scriptures say a great deal about our thought life. And I want to hear you speak to the topic of the sanctification of our minds. I think our listeners will be blessed by what they learn.